All right, well, good morning, everybody. As always, you're listening to the ASSP Healthcare Practice Specialties Health Beat Podcast. We appreciate you joining us today. I'm Corey Warden. I'm the current administrator for the healthcare practice specialty. So today we've got a really cool episode. Today we've got Dr. Curran, who's with Curran Biotech, and he's done just an amazing amount of research as a professor over at the University of Houston on airborne transmission of the COVID-19 virus, as well as different hazard controls for air filtration. So he's just a wealth of knowledge. If you saw our webinar we did earlier this year, he provided a great deal of information there and a great deal of foresight and predictions that we're going to be talking about today as well. So he's just a great source of knowledge, and we're glad to have him here. So, Dr. Curran, short of me speaking for you, if you could give our listeners a bit about yourself, your career, your education, the things you work on, that'd be great. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Corey, and you're very generous in your introduction. I very much appreciate the time that I can get a chance to talk to you again. I'm a physics professor by trade, and I've been working in the field of nanotechnology for the last, oh God, it feels like 100 years, but it's actually 20. I only looked the age, not. So I've been working in nanomaterials, working on materials and surfaces for that wealth of time. Originally, I came from Trinity College in Dublin, did postdoctorate work at the Max Planck Institute in Rensselaer, and eventually found my way here to Houston. So it's been wonderful just coming over here. So I landed here in 2007, set up my nanotechnology group at the University of Houston, and started looking at a whole variety of surfaces and what affected surfaces, how could we bring nano into the real world. And I've been looking at real world solutions for a whole variety of things since then.
Cool. That's definitely very cool work, and done a lot of great stuff there. So I know within your work and research, I know you've specifically in the last 20 months, of course, you've done a great deal of research and work on the COVID-19 virus and airborne transmission. If you can give our listeners a little bit about that, what kind of research you've been doing and some of the findings that you've had in that realm.
Well, like most people, I had heard about this virus appearing around January of 2020. And really didn't give it very much heed. And it was only when my wife actually mentioned that the Chinese government were building a hospital outside Wuhan, and it took them like a week or two to build it, that you kind of stopped and went, why would they do that? Why are they taking this so seriously? This is just the flu, right? And that was the first, I guess, the first warning shot that I had about this virus. And I was supposed to go traveling in early March for an award in San Francisco, which I cancelled. And I cancelled it because there were so many people talking about the virus and the risks and the virus finally appearing in the US. And just to backtrack a little bit, I wrote a paper back in, it must be in 1996, I think, for the Royal College of Surgeons in Dublin on infectious diseases and about the spread of pandemics. And I wrote then about the possibilities that this could happen given our transit abilities. So people be able to relocate from one place to another. And if you have a disease that could be really bad, it could actually transfer across from country to country relatively quickly. And the reason why we didn't see so many of these pandemics in the past was the fact that we didn't have air travel, or we didn't have communications like we do now. So all of that came to my mind when I was looking at this particular virus. And I was worried. I was very, very worried. And I thought, this is going to be really debilitating for the world. So I sat back and we went into lockdown. And while in lockdown, I was left with a huge amount of idle time while looking at this virus, and just how can I contribute to doing something about it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse. I can't provide anything on healthcare, emergency services. I'm not one of those people. I'm a scientist. So the best thing I could do was actually just start researching the virus and viral transmissions. And I guess within about a month and a half, 2 months, I realized that this virus was airborne. And unfortunately, a lot of the warnings that we were getting was keeping 6 foot distancing, making surfaces really clean. These were big things. Make sure you had face masks. Well, in the beginning, if even face masks were not considered a vital item for regular people. And yes, there were reasons behind it all, but it was just a huge amount of confusion was caused. And I think messaging was just not super from the different agencies. So one of the first things I wanted to do was find out where this 6 foot distancing came from. What was behind that? Why the particular number six? I mean, why not three? Why not eight? Why not 10? Why six? And it turns out that there was a study done back in 1936, or 1934, by a professor called Wells, a mathematician, who looked at tuberculosis. And what he could visibly see were droplets of tuberculosis being spat out by somebody, and that it would travel 6 foot, and that was it. And so the whole 6 foot distancing came from that initial study way back when. And since 2005, 2010, virologists right across the world have been screaming that once something is like a coronavirus has got a water droplet that it travels in, it's essentially an aerosol. It travels in the air, and it has a risk. So the 6 foot distancing is not applicable, and all those studies were being ignored, and there was a huge number of people who were screaming that the virus was airborne. And as I said, that all that information, all that science was available. So I thought, okay, if it's airborne, it's in the air, we need to be able to do something about that. We have to be able to extract the air, clean the air, or filter the air. The great thing in the US is that we have filters in everybody's home. It's not like Europe where they're very old buildings and they don't have the same kind of HVAC systems available to them. The US is very lucky that all properties have these HVAC systems, or you can even have box filters. So we could potentially use those as a way or a mechanism to clean the air. And that was the genesis behind the technology that we developed. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to develop a coating so that we could remove the virus from the air very simply. So as the virus would pass through your air filter, it would the air would go through. But any viral particles, which would be those droplets, would get stuck on the filter and that it just couldn't pass through. And it so happened that I was working on hydrophobic surfaces, which is water repellent surfaces, and understanding the science behind that. And we used that as the basis to build our technology. And hydrophobic surfaces are also very attractive for these protein or lipid layers on the virus, that they would actually be attracted to that surface. In a very crude and non-scientific way, it's like having two magnets come together. So the virus would actually be attracted to the surface of the filter, and it would stick on the filter while the water and the mucus and all the rest would evaporate and dry off. And then eventually the virus would desiccate just through its own natural life cycle. The virus is actually quite a weak organism, so that soap and water is good enough to kill it. So simply letting it dry out in the air is sufficient to let it die over time. And that's essentially what we wanted to do. We just wanted to make the filters do their job better, and thereby extracting the virus, which all sounds wonderful. This is all interesting science. We have to build the material. We have to go and then get it tested. And then prove what we were doing. And the other thing is, of course, if you have an air filter, the last thing you want to do is you don't want to clog up your air filter. So we had a number of challenges there. So we had to go get independent testing done with the virus, which we did at Waterlands up in Austin. We actually repeated that with Ramboll, who do a lot of building maintenance and building security, just to kind of prove what we were saying. And we also proved with the city of New York, they hired Edison Energy to see if we would actually restrict airflow, which we did not, which is exactly what we ho had hoped for. So you could actually apply our coating to these fibers, these in the filters. They would attract the virus and the droplets, but essentially the air would flow through, and that was a way to clean the air. So essentially, this was a way for us to be able to do something about this pandemic as it's racing through society. So if you notice, we start getting spikes when people start going indoors or in close proximity. And close proximity could be in the same room. The room could be 20 yards long, but if they're in the same room, there's a greater risk. So this is one way of actually, if you have a positive airflow or you got fans pulling the air upwards and out towards the filters then filter the air, and then the next room would not be affected by the occupancy of the other room. And that's a way to clean the air. I hope that's a long-winded way of answering your question, Corey.
No, that's great. We always appreciate the information. You know, that's a good thing about the webinars and podcasts is that we can really deep dive into it, and then, you know, if it's a lot of details, then we can always go back to it. You know, we can review it later. You know, so it's always good. More information is always better, especially, you know, when people are interested in the really fine points of it. So with all that, you know, that's fantastic. The research you've done and you were able to get into this very early on, you know, when the threat first started to emerge. So knowing all that, you know, I know you talked about the way that the virus travels, you know, with airborne transmission, and then of course you talked about the different filtration controls that you worked on. So with that being said, what kind of solutions or hazard controls are practical, you know, for organizations to be able to put into place to control this?
Well, of course, the biggest thing is get vaccinated. That is the number one, two, and three in all of this game. Now that we actually have real vaccines. But it's also to understand that these vaccines have their limitations as well. And that we could be in this cycle. In a way, look at it like the flu virus, okay, or flu vaccines. Every year, people get a shot for a flu vaccine. Nobody thinks about it. Nobody worries about it. You just go ahead and just get it done. If you adopt that attitude with the coronavirus, then that's going to help be helpful for you. So just expect that you probably have to get a shot or a booster shot every year. And then the really smart people at at Pfizer and Moderna and some of these other companies are going to come up with better vaccines over time. So it's not a cure-all. A vaccine is not a cure-all that it means that we don't have to ever get vaccinated again or that it goes away. It just means that this becomes part of our lifestyle. And what we need to do and organizations need to do is to realize that it was wonderful in 2019, 2018, how we lived our lives then. But things have changed. We have moved on. It's not the same. So we have to adapt to that. And so as an organization, businesses, companies, people who manage properties, they've got to understand that we're not the same as we were 2 or 3 years ago. And that's probably the biggest thing that people have to realize. And once you realize okay, that's what we have to be, then you can actually put in new rules or new systems for you. In the same way that I remember when I went to Vienna as part of my PhD many, many years ago in 1993. I heard a thing about this thing called the internet, and I started using an email system, which really was sketchy at the time. And of course, by 99, there was internet companies everywhere. In a short period of time, over 7 years, the world changed. In the same way, now that we have our phones that can basically do everything and anything, it's got more computing power than NASA back in the 1960s. We just have to adapt to it, and organizations have to adapt to it. And what are those changes? What do they look like? Well, first of all, people should be vaccinated. There's no reason not to get vaccinated unless there's a medical condition. So that's the important caveat. With that said, we still don't know where we are with kids under 12. I know that the FDA and Pfizer are close, but we're still not there. So what can we do to keep places safe? Well, we can still have masks. That's not a bad thing. I think it was an optimistic move by the CDC and the White House to say that we didn't need masks anymore, where vaccinated people could actually be hanging out with each other. And that all sounds wonderful. But with the Delta variant, it's 1,000 times more. You could have 1,000 times more viruses in your every time you breathe out, if even if you're vaccinated. So you can still get you can still get the virus. So it doesn't mean that the virus is gone. It's just that the health risks to you are diminished considerably, which is fantastic. But you can still propagate that spread. So what you got to do is you got to make sure that people are still being very cautious. And I think the mask mandate still needs to be in place. I think I've written about this on my own LinkedIn accounts and published these things. I believe that we really need to keep masks as part of our philosophy. But the other thing we need to do is we need to clean the air. We need to start taking air away from our rooms, cycling through our filters, so any viruses that may be present, any airborne, waterborne viruses may be present, can be filtered out. And that's where capture coating comes in. And that's what my company is now producing. And it's now being used in 12 states around the US, and it's growing. We now have distribution into Canada, we've got distribution into the UK, and we'll be announcing our distribution into Ireland. And hopefully, we'll be trying to spread this out as quick as we can. We are trying to move as quick as possible. We really are. It's like we're racing against the tide. But yeah, these are the things that are really, really simple. UV is not super for against this virus. Spending 15 minutes with stagnant air under UV light to try and degrade the viruses is not a realistic solution. Ionization technology is expensive and have got limitations. So really, we're basically down to the basics. Air masks, vaccinations number one, masks, filtering the air using capture coating, and that's it. And of course, the whole thing of washing your hands is correct. Keep yourself clean, keep surface areas clean. I just think we took that message and went a little bit hyper on it, that we had to go and clean every single surface down to the shopping bags and all the rest, which we all went through last summer. So yeah, that's what organizations need to do. So as people come back in, just be cautious and just adopt these new philosophies. Does that help, Corey?
It's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's definitely a lot of the common thread of everything we've been talking about with the within the healthcare practice specialty is that, we've got the hierarchy of controls, so when we break that down, that tells us, all of our reasonable options there, starting with, are we able to prevent congregations? The further we go, the less feasible that is, so then we get into, well, in that case, can we go to substitution? So can we use outdoor areas instead of indoor areas? And can we change people's locations so they're physically separated? In a lot of cases, that sometimes that's feasible. In some cases, it's not. Then we go down to the engineering controls. Can we use barriers and can we use again physical separation? And then it gets into the air filtration and air circulation, like you've been discussing there, which is great. And then from there we go into the administrative controls, which is per your comments there. We got the social distancing, which is huge. We've got the source control with the face masks when that's possible and when we're able to enact that. And then of course we have for the surface or skin contamination, we have hand hygiene and we have surface sanitation and disinfection. And then of course for the for the higher risk areas, we have the PPE and the respirators. So there's definitely options there, you know, and I do agree that, you know, it's definitely important to keep those in mind and keep the risk under control. So with that being said, you know, with the vaccinations, definitely, you know, hugely important there because it's going to have that 95% efficacy, give or take. And then, of course, it's going to definitely reduce the severity or potential severity of the virus. So if we got the vaccinations sitting, you know, around 60%, give or take, and then, you know, we've got the Delta variant, we've got several other variants floating around, some of which are becoming very prevalent, like Delta. And then we've got the infection rate going up a little bit here in the last month, or a lot in some communities. So do you feel like overall, do you feel like that you would say that the risk of COVID-19 exposures has gone up lately?
I think the answer is yes, but I want to go back over a couple of points that you just mentioned. The first of all, the risks about surfaces is really not big. The biggest thing is the air, is just making sure the air is clean. Surfaces will get some variants. They will have some viruses on the surfaces, but they're not hugely transmissible. So I wouldn't worry as much about that. It's the air that I really worry about. And even social distancing, the whole idea behind the Wells study back in 1934 was that 6 foot was the social distancing you needed. And what we found is that you could be 3 foot away or 24 foot away and you could get the virus just through airborne transmission. So that's not, you know, social distancing sounds great. And the only reason why that actually works is that you don't have a packed room full of more risky people. But you can still get, so you could have two people in a room. One person is not vaccinated or does not have the virus, and another person has a virus on the other side of the room, and that other person with the virus 24 foot away can still spread it to that person who's not vaccinated, who's socially distanced more than 6 foot. So there is still that risk. So the virus will travel long distances. To go back into our numbers, we know that right now we're at, I think it's 49.5% of the country is fully vaccinated, which means that 50% of the country is not. So you're talking about 100 million people, 150 million, 120 million people are not vaccinated. And they're the people who are going to get sick. 97% of people that are in hospitals right now are dying from the virus are people who are not vaccinated. So we know the vaccines work. We know that vaccines can prevent you going to hospital. So if you want to take politics out of this, because the whole thing about vaccinations and masks, and I don't understand why this whole politicization has happened in the country. But let's break it down to dollars. If you happen to not believe in the virus, which is not a belief system, but if you not happen, you don't believe in the virus and you don't believe in vaccines and you don't go and you don't want to do anything here, the bottom line is, if you end up in hospital by chance, the amount of money that you're going to have to pay by being in hospital is going to be astronomical. Aside from the fact that you could actually die, aside from the fact that you're asking healthcare workers to care about you more than you care about you. So just think about the money thing. It's going to cost a fortune. So the vaccine is free. So go get vaccinated. But the reality is we're at 49.5% people are vaccinated. We're going to go through another cycle, which I think will peak sometime September, October. So this is going to be growing in the country. And I'm hoping there'll be enough people vaccinated by the time we get to October that we see it diminishing again and that we can have a better Thanksgiving than we did obviously last year. The biggest wild card in all of this are variants. And the last time I was actually speaking to you, Corey, we were talking about, and I said that I was very worried about variants and their spread. And I listed out some of them, which included the current variant from India. there are other variants that are out there right now. There's the Lambda variant that came from Peru. And there are going to be variants that are going to come from God knows which countries, because what happens is in a country that's got low vaccination rates, people get vaxxed. People have the virus. It stays in their bodies for a long time. It incubates in there and it starts changing its morphology and becomes a new variant. I mean, the number of variants out there are just astronomical. So, my concerns are twofold. One is the longevity of the vaccine. How long will it last in your body to provide you protection? And do we need booster shots? And I would say to the answer to the second part is that yes, we were going to need booster shots. And secondly, the vaccines that were produced against the original virus and it's in the original structure. And most of the variants are very close to that structure, which is why they still work. But at some stage, those variants may change to a point where the current vaccines we have are not suitable. And I believe Dr. Fauci said 2 days ago that he wanted a fund set up so that they could actually look towards a new vaccine to deal with these variants as they come out next year. So I would say that next year we're all going to get vaccinated again. We need to. And that I'm hoping these vaccines will be designed to tackle variants and not the original COVID virus. So these are the, so I don't see this thing going away anytime soon. I see it peaking around September, October. I'm hoping that we get to the holidays and that the most people are vaccinated. I pray that's the case, but we can't let our guard down. We have to be as careful as we should be about this virus. It's not going away. It's now built into our lifestyle. Because I said at the very beginning, when I did a study about in Royal for the Royal College of Surgeons many, many years ago, we know that because our communications between countries is so easy to do, you can go from India to here within what, 14, 16 hours or something. Anything can happen. Anything that is built in places in LA could be transmitted over to Australia very easily. So we have to live with this virus. It's unless we get, there will not be a herd immunity as such as people had been talking about last year. I don't see that happening at all. So it's kind of dark, but it's also, it's a reality check. We just need to know how to live with it. Does that, hope that helps, Corey.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, great information. And yeah, to clarify, I do agree with you definitely is, when we talk about that hierarchy of controls, that's definitely not to say that each of those controls are equal, in terms of effectiveness. So like you said there, when we're talking about social distancing, the big effects when we're indoors is that, number one, it prevents people from being and right in each other's face, So if we have any distance, of course, that's better than face-to-face contact. And then it enables social distancing by having the capacity limits so that if we don't have the room crowded, then there's a less probability of an exposure. But to your point, you can have keep people in the room. If one of them's infectious, the other person just by science is probably going to be exposed if they're not vaccinated, especially if they're unprotected.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of variables in that, and I do feel like it's been relatively oversimplified over the last 18 months, where a lot of people got the wrong impression that, you can go into a crowded room, and if you're wearing a surgical mask, you're going to be protected, which is absolutely not the case.
I'm glad you said that. I really am, because a lot of times people have just taken the let's take a simple message to give to people to let them understand. And then folks have actually taken that simple message and say, and that's all I need to do. And you go, no, this is the beginning of it. This is part of what you need to do. And it's but really the war on science has been the biggest debilitating thing for this treating this virus. That's been the real killer. If people realize and trusted the scientists, we would not be in the boat, not in the same place as we are now.
Yeah, definitely the the political the political angles have definitely been a unique factor in this. And you know, it's interesting too, when we're talking about that is, you know, you have COVID-19, and then of course for for centuries, you know, we've had influenza, we had tuberculosis, you know, all these different airborne transmitted diseases. And we've kind of gotten to the point as a society where people are pretty accepting of a, you know, a certain death rate every year from influenza. And the reality is that, you know, you can prevent a influenza exposure the same way you can prevent a COVID-19 exposure. So with that being said, would you say that the same things that we're talking about today, as far as the controls, I mean, you've got the vaccinations, you've got the capacity limits, you've got the barriers, you've got the air filtration, air circulation, you've got the distancing, hand hygiene, disinfection, all these controls which have differing effectiveness. Would you say that those same controls are effective for other airborne diseases?
I would say yes, absolutely. For years we've ignored a lot of different things. So we know that fried food is not good for you, so therefore you should be out exercising and not eating as much fried food as you should. We know that you should exercise regularly or have a regular sleep cycle. These are things we have to accept, and we all do, and we all know about it. Whether we actually follow through and do the right thing is a completely different question, but that's a personal choice. With the things like influenza and these other airborne diseases, we've kind of accepted them in our lives, and either we do something about it or we don't. And COVID's no different. That's going to be part of our lifestyle. But certainly, some of the things that we're doing against COVID will actually work to our benefit against influenza as well. So that we have masks. And just as a kind of a sidetrack, I remember years ago going off, flying over to Japan, going into Tokyo, and I was wandering around just having a look at the streets and just getting a feel for the country and what a wonderful country it is too. But all these people were wearing masks, and I was looking at them going, "What's wrong with them? Why are they wearing these masks? That seems a bit daft. Why would you do something like that?" And I did know about MERS and SARS. I'd read about it, but I really didn't. The penny did not drop for me. Now I look back and go, I was the idiot. I was the oaf. I was the person who was odd not wearing a mask, because they were doing it so that they could have a normal lifestyle. They could actually go from place to place and carry out their business. And that prevented them getting influenza. It prevented them getting SARS or MERS or any of these airborne diseases. So lifestyle-wise, they were going to do better than, say, the big bohemian me walking through the streets without any protections. So, so I think what we're doing right now by wearing masks, by obviously the vaccines that we're getting are going to prevent COVID, but it does not mean that it prevents influenza or any of these other rhinoviruses where you get the flu or whatever else you might get. But at least it gets you thinking that, oh, maybe I should get my flu shot. And then that's something that we should do as well. I've never had a flu shot in my life. I'm 54 years old, and this year I'm going to get my flu shot because it's a stupid thing not for me to for me not to do it. And that whole when you hear somebody saying, you know, my family we never get sick from colds, and I've never got sick really badly sick from a cold, so I'm not going to get a flu shot. That is the thing I would say, but the reality is, I just didn't feel like doing it, so I just didn't do it. That's the reality. Not because I have some superhuman strength against viruses. It's just I was being lazy. Now we're getting a little bit more conscious about viruses and airborne pathogens. So yeah, I think these mask mandates are good. I think wearing a mask is a good thing, because you know what? Chances are you may not get COVID. You may not also get the flu. You may also just survive the winter without having sniffles. Your kids could do the same thing. But also using our coating for filtration systems, so that we don't have the spread of the virus throughout a building, whether it's a school, especially when you talk about schools. So in particular schools, because we're sending our kids back into places where we're going to have a lot of crowding, and kids can pick up the virus. We know that, and they can spread it to each other. They can get very sick from it. And the last thing I want to do to my child is that I want them to feel sick with long COVID for the next bunch of years, having potentially getting diabetes from it, or heart issues, or kidney function difficulties. So yeah, I think it's really important that we start adopting these systems. And it means that not only are we fighting against COVID, we're also fighting against influenza. We're also fighting against your common cold. The common cold does not need to spread as much as it does. We just accept it. And so these things are all like all extra benefits that we get by just being a little bit more cautious. So yeah, I think what we're learning now is that we know that surgeons have to wash their hands when they go into surgery. We know that it's a good idea to wash your hands before you eat food. Well, now we know that it's good to clean the air as much as we can, or wear masks because it's a good habit. And so we're just getting better at these things. And this is probably the next big step for everybody in society. Keep the air clean as much as you can.
Yeah, interesting how that works out with, over the years that, that kind of gradual acceptance and then of course with the mixed messaging in the last couple months, or excuse me, the last 18 months, 20 months, there's been a lot of, I don't know if confusion is the right word for it, but definitely a lot of variances in what people are reading and what they're hearing and what they're choosing to do with it. So hopefully we can, like you said, hopefully holistically we'll get better at not only preventing COVID-19 and the variants, but also other airborne transmitted diseases, which ideally, of course, that'll definitely prevent the death rate, and then of course prevent a lot of suffering along the way. Is even a common cold, while it may not kill somebody, it's definitely going to provide a couple of days of pretty high discomfort.
Right. And I think when you see somebody who thinks, they're being brave, that they have the cold, but they're still coming into work. I mean, that used to be the attitude that I would see quite frequently. I've got a cold, but I'm still coming into work, and I'm still going to fight the good fight, and I'm still going to do my work, and I don't care how much I'm suffering. Now I look at that person and go home. Stop it. I don't want to get your cold. Go away. Go back and come back when you're healthy. So it's not a smart thing to do. You're not being brave. You're just being disingenuous and being mean to other people. Because when you get a cold, you feel miserable. That's the only thing you feel. You feel miserable. It's not a like going out on vacation. It's just horrible. And the benefits of us now being very good at, keeping our hands clean, but also cleaning the air, using things like capture coating. All the time. That really means that we have a better lifestyle. We don't have to feel sick when we go to work because we don't get the cold. How great is that? No more sniffles. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be good. I know that there's been, many times in at least in my life where I can remember the very severe colds and the flus, and like you said, I just remember, particularly when I was in the military, I remember, they go to the medic and they put you on what they call quarters, where you're not allowed to leave your home, whether it's a barracks room or whether it's a home that you live in, and the other troops, a lot of times, is, oh, you're going on quarters. Yeah, have fun. You're thinking, there's nothing fun about this. I'd rather be in the field on the exercise rather than sitting at home with the flu. Yeah, if we can prevent that, that's better for everybody. And like you said, productivity is not going to be increased by somebody coming to work with a cold or the flu. Not like
That's absolutely correct.
they're not going to come to work and, do this great. Great benefit to the organization. They're just going to be at work feeling sick and probably get our people sick.
Right, exactly. And then and they think they're doing really good. And honestly, I have been there. I have been that wounded warrior going into work, going, I've got a cold, but I'm gonna fight through it. And now I look back at that person that I was and go, you're an idiot. It's not a brave thing to do. Just spreading what you got to other people. Congratulations.
Yeah. So for everybody else listening, if you haven't seen it already, definitely check out our anchor page. It's at anchor.fm/ASSP-HTTPS-HealthBeat. And we have a lot of great podcast episodes on there, a lot of different topics, a lot of great speakers. And then, of course, we also have webinars coming up. So if you haven't seen it, we have a webinar coming up on August 13th. It's going to be about occupational health. And we have a lot of great speakers on there. We're going to be talking about occupational health, what goes on in the occupational health clinic, and how that can be a great partnership with the safety professional. And then, of course, as always, if you'd like to get more involved with the healthcare practice specialty, please check us out on the ASSP communities. And then we also are available on our LinkedIn page and our Twitter account, which is the little @ASSPHTTPS. So with all that being said, we appreciate everybody's time today, and we'll talk to everybody real soon.